Starless Night, Chapter 20, Personal Agenda. The female? Triel asked impatiently, pacing Jarlaxle's private quarters in a secret cave along one wall of the Claw Rift, a great chasm in the northeastern section of Menzoberranzan. Beheaded, the mercenary answered easily. He knew that Triel was employing some sort of lie detection magic, but was confident that he could dance around any such spells. She was a youngest daughter, an unimpressive noble, of a lower house. Triel stopped and focused her glare on the evasive mercenary. Jarlaxle knew well that the angry Benray was not asking about that female, that Carissa Hakkar creature. Carissa, like all the slavers on the Isle of Rothe, had been killed, as ordered. But reports filtering back to Triel had suggested another female and a mysterious great cat as well. Jarlaxle played the staring game better than any. He sat comfortably behind his great desk, even relaxed in his chair. He leaned back and dropped his booted feet atop the desk. Triel swept across the room in a rush and slapped his feet away. She leaned over the desk to put her scowl close to the cocky mercenary. The priestess heard a slight shuffle to one side, then another from the floor, and suspected that Jarlaxle had many allies here, concealed behind secret doors, ready to spring out and protect the leader of Bregan the Arth. "Not that female," she breathed, trying to keep things somewhat calm. Triel was the leader of the highest school in the Drow Academy, the eldest daughter of the first house of Menzoberranzan, and a mighty high priestess in full favor, as far as she knew, of the Spider Queen. She did not fear Jarlaxle or his allies, but she did fear her mother's wrath if she was forced to kill the often helpful mercenary, if she precipitated a covert war, or even an atmosphere of uncooperation between valuable Bregan the Arth and House Benray. And she knew that Jarlaxle understood her paralysis against him, knew that Jarlaxle grasped it better than anyone and would exploit it every step of the way. Pointedly throwing off his smile, pretending to be serious, the mercenary lifted his gaudy hat and ran a hand slowly over the side of his bald head. "Dear Triel," he replied calmly, "I tell you in all honesty that there was no other drow female on the Isle of Rothe, or near the isle, unless she was a soldier of House Benray." Triel backed off from the desk, gnawed at her lips, and wondered where to turn next. As far as she could tell, the mercenary was not lying, and either Jarlaxle had found some way to counter her magic, or he was speaking the truth. "If there was, I certainly would have reported it to you," Jarlaxle added, and the obvious lie twanged discordantly in Triel's mind. Jarlaxle hid his smile well. He had thrown out the last lie just to let Triel know that her spell was in place. By her incredulous expression, Jarlaxle knew that he had won that round.
"I heard of a great panther," Triel prompted.
"Magnificent cat," Jarlaxle agreed. "The property of one Driz Duarden, if I have read the history of the renegade correctly. Gwenhiver by name, taken from the corpse of Massage Hanet after Driz slew Massage in battle."
"I heard that the panther, this Gwenhiver, was on the Isle of Rothe," Triel clarified impatiently.
"Indeed," replied the mercenary. He slid a metallic whistle out from under his cloak and held it before his eyes. "On the isle, then dissolved into an insubstantial mist."
"And the summoning device?"
"You have drizzed, my dear Triel," Jarlaxle replied calmly. "Neither I nor any of my band got anywhere near the renegade, except in battle. And, in case you've never witnessed Driz Duarden in battle, let me assure you that my soldiers had more on their minds than picking that one's pockets."
Triel's expression grew suspicious.
"Oh, one lesser soldier did go to the fallen renegade," Jarlaxle clarified, as though he had forgotten that one minor detail. "But he took no figurine, no summoning device at all from Drizzt, I assure you."
and neither you nor any of your soldiers happened to find the onyx figurine?
No. Again, the crafty mercenary had spoken nothing but the truth, for Artemis Centreri was not technically a soldier of Bregan de Arth. Triel's spell told her that Jarlaxle's words had been correct, but all reports claimed that the panther had been about on the isle and House Benray's soldiers had not been able to locate the valuable figurine. Some thought it might have flown from Drizzt when he'd gone over the ledge, landing somewhere in the murky water. Magical detection spells hadn't located it, but that could be readily explained by the nature of Donegarden. Calm on the surface, the Dark Lake was well known for strong undercurrents and for darker things lurking in the deep. Still, the Benray daughter was not convinced about either the female or the panther. Jarlaxle had beaten her this time, she knew, but she trusted in her reports as much as she didn't trust in the mercenary. Her ensuing expression, a pout so uncommon to the proud Benray daughter, actually caught Jarlaxle off guard.
"The plans proceed," Triel said suddenly. "Matron Benray has brought together a high ritual, a ceremony that will be heightened now that she has secured a most worthy sacrifice."
Jarlaxle considered the words carefully, and the way with which Triel had spoken them. Drizzt, the initial link to Mithril Hall, had been delivered, but Matron Benray still planned to proceed, with all speed, to the conquest of Mithril Hall. What would Loth think about all of this? The mercenary had to wonder.
"Surely your matron will take the time to consider all options," Jarlaxle replied calmly.
"She nears her death," Triel snapped in reply. "She is hungry for the conquest and will not allow herself to die until it has been achieved."
Jarlaxle nearly laughed at that phrase, "will not allow herself to die." Then he considered the withered matron mother. Benray should have died centuries ago, and yet she somehow lived on. Perhaps Triel was right, the mercenary mused. Perhaps Matron Benray understood that the decades were finally catching up with her, so she would push on to the conquest without regard for consequences. Jarlaxle loved chaos, loved war, but this was a matter that required careful thinking. The mercenary truly enjoyed his life in Menza Baranzan. Might Matron Benray be jeopardizing that existence?
"She thinks Drizzt capture a good thing," Triel went on. "And it is. Indeed it is. That renegade is a sacrifice long overdue to the Spider Queen."
"But," Jarlaxle prompted,
"but how will the Alliance hold together when the other matron mothers learn that Drizzt is already taken?" Triel pointed out. "It is a tentative thing at best, and more tentative still if some come to believe that Loth's sanction of the raid is no more, that the main goal in going to the surface has already been achieved."
Jarlaxle folded his fingers in front of him and paused for a long while. She was wise, this Benray daughter, wise and as experienced in the ways of the drow as any in the city, except for her mother and perhaps Jarlaxle. But now she, with so much more to lose, had shown the mercenary something he had not thought of on his own, a potentially serious problem. Trying vainly to hide her frustration, Triel spun away from the desk and marched across the small room, hardly slowing as she plunged straight into the unconventional portal, almost an interplanar goo that made her walk along a watery corridor for many steps, though the door seemed to be only several inches thick, before exiting between two smirking Bregan de Arth guardsmen in a corridor. A moment later, Jarlaxle saw the heated outline of a drow hand against his almost translucent door, the signal that Triel was gone from the complex. A lever under the top of the mercenary's desk opened seven different secret doors from the floors and the walls, and out stepped or climbed several dark elves and one human, Artemis Centreri.
"Triel heard reports of the female on the isle," Jarlaxle said to the drow soldiers, his most trusted advisers. "Go among the ranks and learn who, if any, betrayed us to the Benray daughter."
and kill him?" asked one eager drow, a vicious specimen whose skills Jarlaxle valued when conducting interrogations. The mercenary leader put a condescending look over the impetuous drow, and the other Bragandyarth soldiers followed suit. Tradition in the underground band did not call for the execution of spies, but rather the subtle manipulation. Jarlaxle had proven many times that he could get as much done, plant as much disinformation, with an enemy informant as with his own spies, and to discipline Bragandyarth, any plant that Triel had in place among the ranks would be a benefit. Without needing to speak another word to his well-trained and well-practiced advisers, Jarlaxle waved them away. "This adventure grows more fun by the hour," the mercenary remarked to Entreri when they were gone. He looked the assassin right in the eye. "Despite the disappointments." The remark caught Entreri off guard. He tried to decipher what Jarlaxle might be talking about. "You knew that Drizzt was in the Underdark, knew even that he was close to Menzoberranzan and soon to arrive," the mercenary began, though that statement told Entreri nothing enlightening. "The trap was perfectly set and perfectly executed," the assassin argued, and Jarlaxle couldn't really disagree, though several soldiers were wounded and four had died. Such losses had to be expected when dealing with one as fiery as Drizzt.
"I was the one who brought Drizzt down and captured Caterbury,"
Entreri pointedly reminded him. "Therein lies your error," Jarlaxle said with an accusing snicker. Entreri eyed him with sincere confusion.
"The human woman called Caterbury followed Drizzt down here, using Gwenhiver, and this," he said, holding up the magical heart-shaped locket. "She followed blindly by all reasoning, through twisting caverns and terrible mazes. She could never hope to retrace her steps."
"She will not likely be leaving," Entreri added dryly.
"Therein lies your error," Jarlaxle repeated.
His smile was wide, and now Entreri was beginning to catch on.
"Drizzt Du'Arden alone could have guided you from the depths of the Underdark," Jarlaxle told him plainly.
The mercenary tossed the locket to Entreri.
"Feel its warmth," he explained. "The warmth of the warrior's blood coursing through the veins of Drizzt Du'Arden. When it cools, then know that Drizzt is no more, and know that your sunlight world is lost to you forever. Except for an occasional glance, perhaps when Mithril Hall is taken," Jarlaxle added with a sly wink.
Entreri resisted the impulse to leap over the desk and murder the mercenary, mostly because he suspected that another lever under the desk would open seven other trap doors and bring Jarlaxle's closest advisers storming upon him. But truly, after that initial moment, the assassin was more intrigued than angered, both by Jarlaxle's sudden proclamation that he would never see the surface world and by the thought that Drizzt Du'Arden could have led him out of the Underdark. Thinking, still holding the locket, the assassin started for the door.
"Did I mention that House Horlbar has begun its inquiry into the death of Jurlis?"
Jarlaxle queried at his back, stopping the assassin in mid-stride.
"They have even approached Bragandyarth, willing to pay dearly for information. How ironic, wouldn't you agree?"
Entreri did not turn about. He simply walked to the door and pushed out of the room. It was more food for thought. Jarlaxle, too, was thinking that this entire episode might become more delicious yet. He thought that Triel had pointed out some snares that Machen Benray, blinded by her lust for power, would never notice. He thought most of all that the Spider Queen, in her love of chaos, had placed him in a position to turn the world of Menzoberranzan upon its head. Matron Benray had her own agenda, and Triel certainly had hers, and now Jarlaxle was solidifying one of his own, for no better reason than the onslaught of furious chaos, from which the cunning mercenary always seemed to emerge better off than before. The semi-conscious Driz did not know how long the punishment had gone on. Vendiz was brilliant at her cruel craft, finding every sensitive area on the hapless prisoner and beating it, gouging it, raking it with wickedly tipped instruments. She kept Driz on the verge of unconsciousness, never allowing him to black out completely, kept him feeling the excruciating pain. Then she left, and Driz slumped low on his shackles, unable to comprehend the damage the hard-edged rings were doing to his wrists. All the ranger wanted at the terrible time was to fall away from the world, from his pained body. He could not think of the surface, of his friends. He remembered that Gwenhiver had been on the island, but could not concentrate enough to remember the significance of that. He was defeated. For the first time in his life, Driz wondered if death would be preferable to life. He felt someone grab roughly at his hair and yank his head back. He tried to see through his blurry and swollen eyes as he feared that wicked Vendiz had returned. The voices he heard, though, were male. A flask came up against his lips, and his head was yanked hard to the side, angled so that the liquid would pour down his throat. Instinctively, thinking this some poison or some potion that would steal his free will, Driz resisted. He spat out some of the liquid, but got his head slammed hard against the wall for the effort, and more of the sour-tasting stuff rolled down his throat. Driz felt burning throughout his body, as though his insides were on fire. In what he believed were his last gasps of life, he struggled fiercely against the unyielding chains, then fell limp, exhausted, expecting to die. The burn became a tingle, sweet sensation. Driz felt stronger suddenly, and his vision returned as the swelling began to subside from his eyes. The Benray brothers stood before him. "Driz Duodan," Dantrag said evenly. "I have waited many years to meet you." Driz had no reply. "Do you know me? Of me?" Dantrag asked. Again, Driz did not speak, and this time his silence cost him a slap across the face. "Do you know of me?" Dantrag asked more forcefully. Driz tried hard to remember the name Machen Benray had tagged on this one. He knew Bergignon from their years together at the academy and on patrol. But not this one. He couldn't remember the name. He did understand that this one's ego was involved, and that it would be wise to appease that false pride. He studied the male's outfit for just a moment, drawing what he hoped to be a correct conclusion.
"Weapons master of House Benray," he slurred, blood following every word from his battered mouth. He found that the sting of those words was not so great now, as though they were quickly healing, and he began to understand the nature of that potion that had been forced down his throat. "Zaknafane told you, then, of Dantrag," the male reasoned, puffing out his chest like a barnyard rooster. "Of course," Driz lied. "Then you know why I am here?" "No," Driz answered honestly, more than a little confused. Dantrag looked over his shoulder, drawing Driz's gaze across the room to a pile of equipment. Driz's equipment, stacked neatly in the far corner. "For many years, I desired a fight with Zaknafane," Dantrag explained, "to prove that I was the better. He was afraid of me and would not come out of his hiding hole." Driz resisted the urge to scoff openly. Zaknafane had been afraid of no one. "Now, I have you," Dantrag went on. "To prove yourself?" Driz asked. Dantrag lifted a hand, as if to strike, but held his temper in check. "We fight, and you kill me. And what does Matron Benray say?" Driz asked, understanding Dantrag's dilemma. He had been captured for greater reasons than to appease the pride of an upstart Benray child. It all seemed like a game, suddenly, a game that Driz had played before. When his sister had come to Mithril Hall and captured him, part of her deal with her associate was to let the man, Artemis Entreri, have his personal fight with Driz for no better reason than to prove himself. "The glory of my victory will forestall any punishments," Dantrag replied casually,
as though he honestly believed the claim. And perhaps I will not kill you. Perhaps I will maim you and drag you back to your chain so that Vendez can continue her play. That is why we gave you the potion. You will be healed, brought to the brink of death and healed again. It will go on for 100 years, if that is Matron Benray's will.
Drizzt remembered the ways of his dark people and did not doubt the claim for a minute. He had heard whispers of captured nobles, taken in some of the many inter-house wars, who were kept for centuries as tortured slaves of the victorious houses.
"Do not doubt that our fight will come, Drizzt Duardin," Dantrag said.
He put his face right up to Drizzt's.
"When you are healed and able to defend yourself."
Faster than Drizzt's eyes could follow, Dantrag's hands came up and slapped him alternately on both cheeks. Drizzt had never seen such speed before, and he marked it well, suspecting that he would one day witness it again under more dangerous circumstances. Dantrag spun on his heels and walked past Bergignon toward the door. The younger Benray merely laughed at the hanging prisoner and spat in Drizzt's face before following his brother.
"So beautiful,"
the bald mercenary remarked, running his slender fingers through Catterbury's thick tangle of auburn hair. Catterbury did not blink. She just stared hard at the dimly lit, undeniably handsome figure. There was something different about this drow, the perceptive young woman realized. She did not think that he would force himself on her. Buried within Jarlaxle's swashbuckling facade was a warped sense of honor, but a definite code nonetheless, somewhat like that of Artemis and Treri. And Treri had once held Catterbury as a prisoner for many days, and he had not placed a hand on her except to prod her along the necessary course. So it was with Jarlaxle, Catterbury believed, hoped. If the mercenary truly found her attractive, he would probably try to woo her, court her attention, at least for a while.
"And your courage cannot be questioned," Jarlaxle continued in his uncomfortably perfect surface dialect. "To come alone to Menza Baronzen." The mercenary shook his head in disbelief and looked to Intreri, the only other person in the small, square room. "Even Artemis Intreri had to be coaxed here, and would leave, no doubt, if he could find the way." "This is not a place for surface dwellers," Jarlaxle remarked.
To accentuate his point, the mercenary jerked his hand suddenly, again taking the cat's eye circlet from Catterbury's head. Blackness, deeper than even the knights in the lowest of Brunner's minds, enveloped her, and she had to fight hard to keep a wave of panic from overwhelming her. Jarlaxle was right in front of her. She could feel him, feel his breath, but all she saw was his red glowing eyes, sizing her up in the infrared spectrum. Across the room, Entreri's eyes likewise glowed, and Catterby did not understand how he, a human, had gained such vision. She dearly wished that she possessed it as well. The darkness continued to overwhelm her, to swallow her. Her skin felt extra sensitive, and her senses were on their very edge. She wanted to scream, but would not give her captors the satisfaction. Jarlaxle uttered a word that Catterby did not understand, and the room was suddenly bathed in soft blue light. "In here you will see," Jarlaxle said to her. "Out there, beyond the door, there is only blackness." He teasingly held the circlet before Catterby's longing gaze, then dropped it into a pocket of his breeches.
"Forgive me," he said softly to Catterby, taking her off guard. "I do not wish to torment you, but I must maintain my security. Matron Benray desires you, quite badly, I would guess, since she keeps Drizzt as a prisoner, and knows that you would be a fine way to nod his powerful will."
Catterby did not hide her excitement, fleeting hope, at the news that Drizzt was alive.
"Of course they have not killed him," the mercenary went on, speaking as much to Intreri, the assassin realized, as to Catterby. "He is a valuable prisoner, a wellspring of information, as they say on the surface." "They will kill him," Intreri remarked, somewhat angrily. Catterby had the presence of mind to note. Eventually, Trelaxel replied, and he chuckled. But both of you will probably be long dead of old age by then, and your children as well, unless they are half-drow, he added slightly, tossing a wink at Catterby. She resisted the urge to punch him in the eye.
It is a pity, really, that events followed such a course, Trelaxel continued. I did so wish to speak with the legendary Drizzt D'Uardin before Ben Ray got him. If I had that spider mask in my possession, I would go to the Ben Ray compound this very night, when the priestesses are at the high ritual, and sneak in for a talk with him. Early in the ceremony, of course, in case Matron Ben Ray decides to sacrifice him this very night. Ah, well.
He ended with a sigh and a shrug and ran his gentle fingers through Catterby's thick hair one final time before he turned for the door.
I could not go anyway, he said to Intreri. I must meet with Matron Kerr Horlbar to discuss the cost of an investigation.
Intreri only smiled in response to the pointedly cruel remark. He rose as the mercenary passed, fell in behind Jarlaxle, then stopped suddenly and looked back to Catterby.
I think I will stay and speak with her, the assassin said.
As you will, the mercenary replied. But do not harm her, or, if you do, he corrected with another chuckle, at least do not scar her beautiful features.
Trelaxel walked out of the room and closed the door behind, then let his magical boots continue to click loudly as he walked along the stone corridor, to let Entreri be confident that he was gone. He felt in his pocket as he went, and smiled widely when he discovered, to no surprise, that the circlet had just been taken. Trelaxel had sown the seeds of chaos. Now he could sit back and watch the fruit of his labors grow.